The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Or 51551. It's Nancy Blakes in Limerick and Nancy Spain is in Cork. That's my mix-up there. Now, every Friday we invite somebody into a studio. I'm saying a studio today because it's the turn of Mary O'Rourke and she's in her Athlone studio. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hello, Ray. Hello to all of you. And hands off the Athlone studio. We love having it.
That's the only reason you agreed to do this, Mary. Is the rumour going around Athlone that RTE are going to close the studio, is there?
Well, no, but every day you read horrific articles how hard up everyone is. And I said to myself, well, I'm going to shout out about Athlone. So I've done that bit. And the second thing I want to shout out a bit is I'm delighted you've Brian Kennedy tomorrow night on your TV. Brian Kennedy, Catherine Lynch and myself were spent an hour a month for 3 years reading books together. And I made a great friendship with Brian and he's a good guy.
Great. Times are tough here, Mary. We're not over-exaggerating it. We'll see what happens in the coming... But we do need a state broadcaster that's independent.
Oh, yes, and I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave that there, park it. Now, it's your life. It's your life, as Brian Kennedy has just sung. It's your life, and looking forward to chatting to you about it. Because people know your political life, but they don't probably know too much about Mary O'Rourke before that. So that's what we're going to concentrate on. So you were born in 1937.
A long time ago.
To Annie and Pádraig or PJ.
Yeah, Annie Scanlon, Annie Lenehan and PJ. Sometimes if she was cross with them, she'd call them Pádraig. Yeah, PJ.
Yeah, and whereabouts in the country?
In Athlone. Oh, I'm Athlone. Bred, born and reared, yes.
And where were your two parents from?
My mother was from Sligo, from Drumcliff, and my father was from Clare.
And how did they meet, Mary?
Oh, well, they were students, county council scholarships of the day in to Galway, UCG, as it then was. And they met as students, and in the old-time fashion, they fell in love, and then they married.
Hmm. And that was a time when only, you know, privileged people went to university, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, well, they went on a scholarship.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that was under the old regime, if you like. But there was apparently there was a very good system of county council scholarships. And both from her school in Sligo and my father from St. Flannan's in Clare, both of them got county council scholarships to go to Galway. Oh, neither. They wouldn't have gone. Only they got the cash to do so.
Right. And why did they choose Athlone? Was it a midpoint, a halfway point?
No, that's a fierce long story, Ray.
Was it right? Okay.
Well, I'll try and kind of put it together very quickly. My father went on then to become a civil servant in revenue. Yeah. And he was moved to Dundalk. He was married at this stage to my mother. And they moved to Dundalk where she had child number one and 12 months later, child number two. And then he was moved to Tralee, we hope on promotion, I don't know anything about that, where they had my sister Anne, and then my father, to head office in Dublin Castle, in the revenue, a good civil servant. Mm. And they lived out in Sutton, in County Dublin. And at that time, Sean Lamass was Minister for Industry and Commerce, and he had business with my father in Dublin Castle, and he kind of liked the look of him and the jib of him, and he said to him, would he take time off from the civil service and go down to Athlone, where the government were going to set up a state-owned cotton factory.
Right.
Now, my father said, fine, I'll do that. And he went home and told my mother, and he said to her, pack your traps, Annie, we're leaving for Athlone. Anyway, they were both country people, so Athlone sounded halfway to Sligo, halfway to Clare.
Yeah.
And they went off, and she arrived in Athlone with three children aged 5, 6 and 7, and I was in her tummy.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and therefore I was born in Athlone. So they set up in the middle, it was General Textiles Limited, and at its height, it employed 1,000 people.
And state-owned?
State-owned. When you think of it now, it's an amazing thing. And we lived, there had been a Protestant boys' secondary boarding school on the land that the state bought, and in the middle of it was the old house of the boarding school, and we lived, so we lived not over the shop, but in the shop, in the middle of the shop.
The middle of the factory?
In the middle of the factory, in this real old-fashioned, terribly cold boarding school that used to be for Protestant boys called Ranelagh School. And yeah, there was, I spent my childhood and the others too, and we had a great time. It was on the banks of the river. My father got an old rowing boat, but none of us were allowed into the boat until we could swim. And I remember my mother and we going off up the river saying, imagine there were no life jackets that time, there were no health and safety, there was nothing like that. But she used to say to us, if the boat overturns, swim for the nearest shore. The nearest
good
shore,
advice,
you know.
Yeah.
And so off we used to go. Yes, we. Yeah. And he taught us all to swim, my father did, in the cold River Shannon. Mm. And that's why that kind of swimming, I always appealed to me, open swimming rather than swimming pools. Yeah.
So we found a factory hooter. I don't know if this sounds like the one that would have went off back
every
in the day.
Eight
then.
Hours,
let's,
every
let's
8 hours.
Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
Something
a bit
like that.
It.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, that went off right through the town every 8 hours because at one time there was full employment round the clock and that went off and we were in the middle of it. But that's why, you know, a hooter is one of my earliest kind of memories yeah, of yeah, of noise.
And
from childhood.
Was it, Mary, it was textile, and yeah, then where did the textile go then? What was it used for?
Oh, all over the world. They made fabulous sheets, constellation sheets, and towels, and pillowcases.
Right.
And there was a BDF, bleaching, dyeing, finishing.
It was a finished product. It was a finished product.
And out it was. And in those years, Ireland was in a kind of a protected status. But anyway, later on, that was to change, as you know. And yet, when I go places, I may be doing a talk, and if I talk about Gentex, as it was called, and I say to the audience, has anybody here got constellation sheets? And at least three women will put up their hands that they have them.
Did the name Constellation come from?
Do you know, I don't know that.
Yeah.
But the whole advertising was about Constellation. And another day I was at something and I met the woman who was the model standing with the Constellation sheets.
She modelled sheets.
She modelled sheets, but not around her. No, I know. But anyway, that was my childhood.
And that was one of the sounds from your childhood. What about your first memory? Your first living memory.
I remember vividly, I was thinking about that when you asked me the question. When Neil put the question to me. You see, I can vividly remember I was only four and I was being brought down to school on the back of a woman called Bridgie Breen's bike.
Right.
And I was cocked up on the back of it and I started to cry and snivel. I can remember the snivelling and the crying, roaring crying. And she stopped at a shop and she went in and she bought a club milk. There were club milks then. And she came out and gave it to me and that stopped me howling.
Who was Bridgie Breen?
Bridgie Breen was a lovely young woman who, when my mother had the two babies, one after another, in Dundalk, this young woman from Louth came to help her in the house.
Mm.
And then when we moved to Tralee, she went with her. And when we moved from Tralee to Dublin, she went with her. And when we moved from Dublin to Athlone, she went. She came with the family, like. And then she married an Athlone guy, finally, after all her travels. And that was Bridgie Breen. But I can so fondly remember her because she was just like another mother in the house.
I'd imagine once you got used to school, you liked it?
I did. But school was primary school. When I see children now and grandchildren and all that going to, they have a great time, as you know, Ray. Mm. In primary school now, they're taught to be themselves and to paint and to have adventures and all those things. Oh no, we were clocked into our seats with the Sister of Mercy in charge, and there wasn't much straying from that. Mm. No, no.
Seen and not heard, I suppose.
Oh yes, seen and not heard. Yeah, yeah.
Well, when you got out from the restrictions and the confines of school, what sort of child were you?
I was kind of a notice box, you know. I was.
I'm not surprised, Mary.
don't be laughing unkindly at me.
No, but I mean, you wanted a bit of attention.
Yeah, I did.
Nothing wrong with that.
We used to put on little plays. My father gave us an empty room that was in this Ranelagh school, and myself and a gang, boys and girls and my family, we used to put on little plays, and they were very inventive and very good. And I remember after one of them, my father saying to my mother, "She'll be on the stage yet, Annie. She'll be on the stage." Mm. And I often thought about it. I suppose politics, in a way, is on a stage, isn't it?
Of course it is. Yes, of course it is. You have to have a bit of an actor in you, don't you?
Yeah, you do. But
and a bit of a notice box. I've never heard that expression before. A notice box.
Somebody looking for notice.
Wanted a bit of attention.
A kind of a show off.
And your dad, was he into singing and dancing and getting people to notice him?
No, not really. No. I think it was because I was the youngest of the four. You know, there were 3, 1, 2, 3, as there used to be. Then there was a long gap and a couple decided again. And I was the result of that. Yeah. But no,
what sort of man was he?
Oh, he was a very outgoing guy, Ray. Mm. Very outgoing. Sort of enthusiastic about everything. And he was, very affirmative and ebullient and... he was a real outgoing guy, outgoing altogether. I can remember so vividly all of that. You could never down him, you know. He wasn't going to be put down. But he did a lot of good. He was a great guy. But anyway, that was it. He was that kind of a personality. My mother, on the other hand, was kind of more cultured. That sounds a bit odd because they both had the same kind of education. But she would be quieter, you know. Mm. I suppose having all those kids was no easy task.
Four was a small enough family back then.
Was it?
Sure.
I always thought I was part of a big family.
No, not at all. Back in the day, I'm from a family of 9, and then the Harringtons down the road were 14.
And
then the Flynns up the way, I think, were 18. And, you know, there was loads of 9s. And
I think all the travelling around the country.
Probably, it felt like there were more. I'm going to play you this song and tell me the significance of it after we play it in.
Setting on a bright meadows
of Shelmaleer, a rebel hand set the heather blazing and brought the neighbours from far and near.
There you go.
I sang that with you.
The Clancy Brothers there.
With
accompaniment by Mary O'Rourke.
Well, yeah. Bool of Oak, when my father would get into his cups, but particularly around Christmas time when they'd had a factory party and everybody was in good humour, and he would be asked to sing. And he had two songs. One was Bool of Oak. I don't know why. I suppose when he was a young student, maybe it was a rebel song they sang. I don't know. And the other one was The Queen of Connemara, which is about a boat. It's a beautiful song as well.
We have that here. Will I give that a spin as well?
I'll just sing a little bit of it. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. She will ride in her pride like a seagull. Beauty every line.
And the Queen of Connemara is that bounding bark of mine.
There you go.
Oh, I can see him standing there.
Can you?
The crowd around him, and he's singing. I can, of course.
And what was that expression you used there? I'm loving these expressions. Was it when he was cupped or cups or what?
When he was in his cups.
In his cups, right.
Did you never hear that?
I've really? Never heard that, Mary, no.
Well, it is a man or woman, it has a couple of drinks too many.
They're in their cups.
And they're in their cups,
yeah. Isn't it, because it sounds like a love song, but it's about a boat.
It's about a boat, a lovely Connemara boat, the Queen of Connemara. They were his two specials, and he would launch into one or the other. Yeah. So whenever I hear either of those now, and interestingly enough, I was recently at Noel Whelan's funeral mass, and God rest him, and they alone musician played that at the end of the mass, because of course he was from Wexford.
So there was no TV in the house at the beginning.
Not at all. Sure, when Neil asked me that, I roared laughing. Sure, we didn't have TV in Ireland, I think 1961, 62, yeah. And so there was no TV.
We'll go back to radio in a minute, but just, can you remember seeing a TV for the first time?
Yes, I can, and it was very cloudy.
Yes.
I was married in 1960, and Enda said, we're going to get a TV. Mm. That was my husband, my late husband, God rest him too. But he went out and he bought a TV, and we got the guy who hooked it up, and the two of us sat down to look at it. And it was very cloudy.
Yeah.
Very cloudy. But anyway.
I would imagine it was remarkable and exciting all the same.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, we're going to hear everything that's going on everywhere else, you know, and being curious as I was. And of course, it very quickly became kind of, you had to view, it was necessary viewing all the time. Mm. But it was, so no TV.
So prior to that, yes, it was the radio.
Radio all the time.
And BBC, we got a clip from 1940, so you would have been 8.
No, not in 1940, I was...
Sorry, three.
Will you stop it, Ray?
I'm aging you, Mary, sorry about that.
No, sure, you're okay.
Are there memories of the family gathering around the radio?
No, not really. We had I remember the radio itself, it was a great big-looking thing. And that was on very frequently. My mother used to have it in the kitchen living room, and my father would have it in a room where he did some work, some book work. But would have another radio. No, I don't ever remember saying, oh, let's watch out, there's something on the radio.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Well, Neil found this clip from 1940, September 15th.
Here is the midnight news, and this is Alvar Liddell reading it. Up to 10 o'clock, 175 German aircraft had been destroyed in today's raids over this country. Today was the most costly for the German Air Force for nearly a month. In daylight raids, between 350 and 400 enemy aircraft were launched in two attacks against London and southeast England. About half of them were shot down.
There you go. Alvar Liddell.
Well, needless, at 3 years of age, I wasn't listening to that.
So you were blissfully unaware of the Second World War.
Oh, really? Yeah, yes. Blissfully.
Yes.
The only thing I remember when it was over was the first time seeing in a shop bananas.
Right.
We hadn't had bananas during the war, wherever they came from. And I remember looking at this thing, this yellow thing, and wondering, and my mother brought them home when she went grocery shopping, and I remember her peeling them and saying, this is very good for you. Usually when a mother would say that, you'd say, oh, but I thought the banana was gorgeous.
Right.
And I still do.
Got a thumbs up from me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
My father worked in Gentex in the BDF, where they made the Constellation sheets.
Ah.
I too remember the Hooter. It was part of Athlone Life, said Jackie, and our very best sheets in Loretta in Bray were Constellation sheets.
Imagine.
If my memory serves me, there was an aircraft called a Constellation, so somebody else.
Yeah, well, that would be in keeping with the time.
Yeah.
First airplane, 37, 38, 39. And Jackie was in the BDF, was he? Well, hello, Jackie, how are you?
Yeah. Mm. So that was what? Something dying and something. BDF, what did it mean again?
Bleaching, dying, and finishing.
Aha.
BDF, yeah.
I'm very familiar with the term notice box from primary school days in Longford. comfort. Any girl who raised her head above the parapet will be told to sit down, you notice box.
Wonderful to hear Mary's reminiscence.
That's Marie.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary, you're going to stay with us in our Athlone studio, and we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll talk to Mary O'Rourke more about the soundtrack to her life after this.
Okay.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Mary O'Rourke is in our Athlone studio and she's guiding us through the soundtrack to her life. Mary, just for your information, and it's a coincidence because last week we spoke to Colin McInumera. Was it last week or the week before? 2 weeks ago, about his soundtrack to his life, and he is the man who played Boule of Ogue at Noel Whelan's funeral.
On
his fiddle or his violin.
And it was already beautiful.
Yes, he's a beautiful player.
And it is a wonderful song. Mm. I know it's a rebel song, but there's something very wonderful about it. Yes, indeed.
I still treasure the constellation sheets my gran gave me 30 years ago, says Geraldine. There's loads of
constellation. Yeah, I'm always amazed at that because they went out of production like in the early 60s. And here people, see, they were made of the finest of cotton.
Mm.
And they lasted, obviously.
The finest of state cotton.
Yeah, finest cotton.
What did you want to be when you grew up? What were you dreaming of?
I wanted to be, believe it or not, a journalist. I was always reading where journalists were, what they were writing. And I used to say at home, I'm going to be a journalist. Now, there was never on television or radio or in the papers, there was never a woman journalist. I couldn't. And I was always going on about this, and there was no courses for journalism. And my father said, the best thing you could do is go to college and get a good degree in English. And that's what I did.
Sound advice.
Well, it was sound advice because it stood me in a lot of, you know, it stood to me quite a lot. But I always wanted journalism, and kind of I've gone back a bit to it now. I do a bit of writing, as you know.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking at things, how I think journalists would do.
You have a journalist sigh. What sort of a teenager were you? Were you wild, rebellious?
Yeah, sort of. I went to boarding school, you see, so there wasn't much time for being rebellious, you know. Mm. You had to toe the line quite a lot. I hated boarding school. I was always cold and I was always hungry and I was always lonely. Right. So imagine the three things in life.
Sounds grim, Mary.
Yeah, it was very grim, but I got a great education, and I always say that a terrific nun, a mother, Benvenuta, she taught us Latin and English, and she was, you stand in the rain to listen to her. Mm. She was a terrific teacher, and that stood me in very good stead. Sister Benvenuta, yeah.
Great name. Mm. And then you went on to college and you did English.
I did an English degree, yes.
And was it around that time that the cotton factory closed down?
No, the cotton factory closed. It began to, you see, synthetics came in, you know, as you can imagine, and everybody went wild for them. If they had waited the pace, Egyptian cotton is fiercely popular now. Anyway, it was no longer us against the world, you know, we were opening up and there was all sorts of other influences. So synthetics came in, and crimpoline and jacqueline and all those things. And we all had to, the demand for the cotton went down. And bit by bit, bits of it went spinning and different things. And then by the early 60s, it had virtually stopped. Yes, it had. Now, it had had from 35, let's say, to nearly 60, very steady employment, yeah.
So your parents bought a little hotel.
Yeah, it would be called, if they were around now, Mom and Dad, it was called a boutique hotel, 12 bedrooms.
Right.
Now, have you been to the Hudson Bay? You have,
I have.
It's the Taj Mahal of the Midlands.
It's a big hotel.
It's a big, with five extensions.
Yes.
But when I was 12, we went to live there. You see, the others were 17, 18, 19, all gone on to college and different things. So I was, my childhood from 12 on, which are, as you know, Ray, hugely formative years.
Yes, yeah.
I kind of grew up there, you might say.
It makes sense now, Mary, though, because you were then in the company of adults nearly all the time in a hotel.
I was, that's right,
yes, yeah.
And I liked my time there, but I missed town, and I used to get on my bicycle every day and ride into town where I'd meet my friends up in the ice cream parlour or the coffee shop or whatever, because they were my friends and I had made them in childhood. And then I went to Thoughts and Bay, and then I went to boarding school. So all of that. And then
when did you meet Enda? What age were you?
Oh, yeah, I met Enda. I went to college. In UCD in the old Earlsford Terrace when I was 17. And then my sister, who had been trained for hotel management, she got married and she went off to live in Galway. And my father and mother said to me, when I went through college and got my degree. Now, I had met Enda about a year earlier when I was about 18 going for 19. I met him in the Hudson Bay where the hotel was. I was playing tennis and he and another pal of his were out and they were watching us. And he said to the other guy, "Who's that girl?" And he told him and he said, "Well, I'd like to meet her." So he met me and we kind of hit it off, you know, I think we did anyway. And he used to come up and down to Dublin when I was in college to see me. And then when I got my degree and came home, my father said to me, "Would I stay at home for a year until they could get someone?" Because they had no one to help them, really.
With the hotel,
yeah. In the hotel. I said, "I'm delighted. Oh, yes, of course I will." So I used to work during the day and fly off with them at night. And he had a car. Not many guys had cars then. And that's when
it was a real love story. I remember reading your book, your biography,
Just Mary. Yes,
Just Mary, and you spoke and wrote so lovingly about Enda.
Oh, I did. I loved him, and he loved me. And that was from about 18. I was then 22 when I got married, and he was 24.
Right.
So in today's terms, it's very young.
But back in the day, everybody got married around that age.
You kind of had to if you wanted to be together. You know. There was no other way out of it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you really were mad about one another, Ray, as we were, in love, and wanted to be physically together.
Ah, I see,
the only way you could do that.
Now I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You see, you were speaking in code there. So
there was no code in it.
If you wanted to consummate your relationship, you had to get married.
My God, we didn't know the word then. No, we certainly didn't know that word. But yeah.
That's it.
Yes, indeed.
Any songs? I've one song here that you remember from your 20s. So you would have been courting Enda at the time.
Well, I was married when
you were married,
22.
Yes, too. Yes. Let's have a listen to this. This is 1965. 64.
Oh. My poor heart feels
Oh, much
like
more. Yeah.
Cause I never see you again. Still nobody walking the streets in the rain.
Yeah, Butch Moore is right.
Oh, Butch was terrific.
That
wasn't
song,
he
was, that represented us in the first time we entered into the Eurovision Song Contest. That was our entry.
Butch Moore, and he was so good looking and had such a terrific voice.
He came sixth, which is a good showing compared to what we've been doing over the last few years.
Sixth. Well, I liked that song very much. And he sang it with great emotion. He did. Yeah.
And so you did the hotel and then you went back to, you went to teaching for...
I had to go back to Maynooth to do my
H-dip.
Yes. Yeah. That was 9 years after I got my degree.
And how long did you teach for?
About 5 years. And no, in case you get any cause, I don't have a teacher's pension. I wasn't long enough in.
You're so defensive.
I'm not defensive.
Yeah,
people have come back at me when I said I was, so you have a teacher. No,
right.
I never joined. You had to join the pension scheme.
You have a ministerial pension.
I have, exactly.
Yes. I had the pleasure of Mrs. O'Rourke for history and English.
Oh.
She had a knack of bringing the subject to life and we had so much respect for her. Absolutely lady who had the ability to keep all students engaged in Summerhill College. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's where I taught. That's a lovely, whoever you are, thank you.
Yeah, and David says, "I remember Mary collecting us from the train station at Lone in her bright yellow Ford Escort and bringing us to Ballycairn, where we had the use of a boat. Me and four other lads, all 18, 19-year-olds, which included her nephew, Brian Jr. Used to spend part of her summer holidays on the Shannon.
We all love the Shannon.
Liz says, loving listening to Mary O'Rourke, I was the model for Constellation Sheets in the Green Shield Stamps catalogue.
that's the woman I told you about earlier, that I met her. And she was gorgeous looking when I met her.
That's Liz there.
There you are. Do you ever know what life throws at you?
Liz, great to hear from you. I'd say you have more claims to fame, but that's one of your claims to fame.
Yeah.
That you were the model for Constellation Sheets. And there is a song in the ad for Constellation which went, Constellation, lovely lasting sheets for you, smooth, crisp pillowcases too, beautiful for 5 more years, Constellation guarantees.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you can remember the tune.
I can't.
Mary O'Rourke Constellation means a group of stars. I'm sure that's why the sheet manufacturing company called it that. And I took out my wedding dress from 1982 the other day and it was wrapped in a
Constellation sheet.
It was indeed, yes.
Isn't that great?
And Mary here in Limerick, wish Mary O'Rourke all the best. I worked with her late husband, Enda, in Jacobs in Dublin.
Oh.
And Maura in Mayo says, you're a tonic, enjoying the interview. And please say hello to Mary O'Rourke from another Mary O'Rourke and say thanks for all her support.
Hello, Mary O'Rourke. How are you?
So there. And delighted that you're interviewing Mary O'Rourke. Some years ago, during Active Ageing Week, Mary gave the homily at the Augustinian Church in Drogheda.
She
is such an ad for positive ageing. Best wishes. That's Father Iggy O'Donovan.
Father Iggy O'Donovan, I love him. And he invited me up to give that homily. Uh-huh. And then I met him actually at Noel Whelan's funeral the last time I talked to him.
He's a great man.
He's a great guy.
Mary, I think we've delivered you up now to the steps of government buildings.
Please don't.
No, we have to go. We'll talk again, I'm sure.
Please. I've tons of more stuff to tell you.
Well, we'll talk again. We will talk again. And it's always a pleasure talking to you, Mary. You know that.
And for me, the same, Ray. Right, absolutely. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night now to Brian Kennedy and to some of the others.
Yeah, we've a great lineup tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Neil says we'll definitely talk to you before Christmas.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Bye.
Mary, mind yourself. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.